yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time here on the College Draft Podcast. There's no more NFL games for a while, which means the focus is on the draft, which means this is the podcast that you need to be listening to and telling your buddies about, the College Draft Podcast. We are presented by the fine folks over at the Scouting Academy, which is simply incredible. I might even do it this summer just to learn more. You get a fundamental understanding of player evaluation, teaching technique, general schematics relating to each individual. I mean, like head coaches, GMs, teaching you personally. The first standardized training program for personnel evaluation. You want to get into it. You think you might want to get into it. You're curious about it. Whatever the case may be, go to the Scouting Academy or go to Scouting Academy, the logo on the sponsor page at rostucker.com, and boom, that is how you get $50 off if you register to take the classes. Unfortunately, Fran is under the weather today. He's got the Eagles Super Bowl flu. So it'll just be me solo with Mike Mayock, the man NFL Network. He's today's best available interview.
Best available interview.
As promised, anytime I get a chance to talk to Mike Mayock, who is and has been the premier draft analyst for quite some time, it's absolutely a pleasure here on the College Draft Podcast. Mike, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Hey, always love talking to you, Ross.
You know, it's funny because we talked about it before, Mike, but it is kind of crazy that, I mean, you kind of were the best right away. Like, how did that happen? I mean, there's other guys that have been draft analysts for decades. You were calling games and doing all different kind of things. Then all of a sudden, you're a draft analyst, and pretty much right away, everybody thought you were the best one. How does that work? That's not the way life's supposed to work.
I'm not sure it really happened that way. But, I mean, first of all, I think the godfather of this profession is Mel Kiper, and I pay a lot of respect to Mel, and Mel and I get along great. And he's the guy that kind of, before anybody else even thought about doing it, he was the go-to guy for information on the draft. And I give him a ton of credit, and we just kind of do things a little bit differently. And I like being in the field. I like being at the pro days. I like being out there with the coaches, the players, the scouts. I want to smell the grass. I want to talk to people. I want to compare notes with what I saw on tape, with what they saw. So the way it really did start, Ross, was that I wasn't good enough at something else, apparently, because I auditioned at NFL Films for what ultimately became the Total Access show. And they told me I didn't have a big enough name, and that show, I couldn't do that show. And there, but they liked me, and they said, listen, we got to do something with college football, and we don't know how to do it. And, you know, we want to get involved with the draft because that's our future, and we want you to do it. And I told Howard Katz I wasn't interested. I said, you gotta be kidding me. There's no future for somebody at the NFL Network doing college football. I mean, there's no future in that. And 15 years later, it was the best decision I ever made.
Unbelievable. And it's not the only job you have. You do games for Westwood One. You also do the Eagles preseason games, Mike. And I wanted to, you know, before we get into the draft stuff, you know, every year, I think on some level, teams look at the successful teams. They look at like the Eagles, for example, and they think, okay, what have they done? You know, what's their roster like? What have they done well? What are the lessons that can be learned? As a guy that lives in Philadelphia, covers the team, does their preseason games, follows them closely, what are sort of your big takeaways, Mike, from the Eagles? Lessons that can be learned for teams going into this year's draft?
I think the biggest lesson is that if your head coach and your general manager aren't tied together at the hip philosophically, you've got no shot to win in the NFL. And you only need to go back 3 years to where Chip Kelly was running the Eagles franchise. Howie Roseman had been banned basically to the other side of the building, and they install a new offense, new defense, and when they figured out it wasn't going to work and Chip moved on, they moved back to Howie Roseman. And to be honest with you, Howie hasn't gotten enough credit in this in the city of Philadelphia. And I think people are starting to recognize that the job he did in the last 2 years, Ross, to me is mind-boggling. They went from basically being in shambles to all of a sudden a clear direction, an ability that the biggest thing they did was went out and got Carson Wentz. And that was a lot harder. People forget that he had to go from 13 to 8 to 2 in that draft to get Carson Wentz. He's built through draft. He's built through free agency. And all you have to do this year is look at some of the trades he made also. I mean, he put together a 53-man roster using all three components. And then Doug Peterson, who a lot of people vilified in Philadelphia 2 years ago, and again last offseason, he's a leader of men, and he helped develop some of that young talent that Howie Roseman brought in. So that it just continues to reinforce my job's to be in all 32 buildings, Ross. And it just continues to amaze me in how many buildings the head coach and his staff and the GM and his staff don't get along or don't see things the same way. And I think in those buildings, you got no shot of winning.
It's a good point, Mike. And it's interesting, too, because we've seen in recent days guys like Steve Keim and Steve Wilks in Arizona, they've had their contracts matched up. The same with Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia in Detroit. So at least contractually, it seems like some of these teams are trying to do that. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about revolves around red flag guys, Mike, because, you know, the news has been littered with guys this week. You know, Manziel's kind of doing the media circuit and probably more importantly, Reuben Foster, who when he was on the field had an awesome rookie year, but for multiple reasons wasn't on the field. His name is in the news for the wrong reasons yet again. That's the second time in 2 months here. And so I wonder what the timing of that, Mike, has on this year's draft. You know, right before the combine, you know, we got the draft stuff, and here you've got a guy for the 49ers that they evidently say they would have taken it 3, that who knows what his status is now. How much of an impact do you think the latest Reuben Foster news will have on teams' decision-making in the draft as it relates to red flag players?
I mean, all you have to do is look back to last year's drafts, Ross, and every year there's talking points regarding off-the-field issues. And Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, both of whom were first-round talents. Teams were salivating about their talent. Both kids got looked at and scrutinized by all 32 teams, and I can tell you point blank that there were several teams that had both those players off their board for off-the-field reasons. There are other teams that say, hey, we think that we can manage that person, that we can put him in an infrastructure where we can help that person become a better person. And let's face it, a great football player, which is really the priority, right? So, you know, Dalvin Cook goes in the second round. Mixon goes in the second round. This year, you know, Reuben Foster's in the news. There were red flags on Reuben Foster. I loved him as a player. There were red flags off the field about him. I think a lot of conversation this year is going to center on Baker Mayfield. And you know what? Teams kind of divide things, Ross, into, you know, when you start looking at off-the-field stuff, there's the minor stuff, and it happens. And guys test positive for pot, or get pulled over for pot, or whatever. And in today's society, a lot of people smoke pot, let's face it, right? The concern is habitual users. That might, if you test positive 2 or 3 times and all of a sudden you're losing time on the field, that's a big deal. So that's kind of considered on one side. The bigger side is, you know, are you hitting or abusing women? Are you doing performance-enhancing drugs? And you look at Baker Mayfield, he's done none of that, yet he plays the most focal position there is that's the face of your franchise. And I think teams are going to look and scrutinize him very directly. What is this kid? And I looked at Johnny Manziel a few years ago, Ross, and I'll be honest with you. I talked myself into that kid because I liked his tape so much. And he likes to have a couple beers. Well, you know, it went way beyond that, and I'm kicking myself for for jumping in on the Manziel bandwagon 4 years ago. So, yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think he gets highly scrutinized by every team, and it's amazing how every team has their own standard that's different from other teams.
Yeah, and not to belabor the point, Mike, I always look at it with these top quarterbacks. Like, you know, if I were a GM, and I've got two young daughters, if I were a GM, I mean, when you draft a quarterback in the top 10, you're basically tying your career to that young man. I mean, you really are. If he's a success, you're probably going to be a success. If he's not, you're probably going to be fired. And so for me, Mike, it always comes down to, I got to be able to sleep at night, you know? And if I drafted Carson Wentz, and I told Howie Roseman this after he made the trade, after calling the FCS championship game 2 years in a row, I'd be able to sleep at night, you know, after I drafted Carson Wentz. You know, I'm no quarterback guru, Mike, about footwork, and I don't know that stuff. I really don't. But I feel like I know people and quarterbacks, and that would be my concern with some of the things I've seen from Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen. And none of the stuff's that bad, but I don't know if I would sleep great at night with those guys as opposed to some of these other guys. And I also, some of the gestures and things that Mayfield's done, or even like, you know, Rosen, some of the comments he's made and wearing the hat that he wore on the golf course and stuff like that. I just look at the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, Mike, and I try to think, okay, who's the example of a guy that acts like that, that's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and I really can't find one. I mean, I can find him if I go down the list more to like a Cutler or someone like that, but I can't find a top 10 guy that acts like those guys.
And it's a really intriguing point, Ross, because, you know, to bring up Carson Wentz again, we can all look at the film and figure out the tangibles, the size, the arm strength, the footwork. You know, they reveal themselves if you watch enough tape. The hard part for any player, but especially the quarterbacks, are the intangibles. And to give you an example, when I went to Fargo, North Dakota for Carson Wentz's pro day, it was the third time I had met him. Met him at the Senior Bowl a little bit, then again at the Combine. I was intrigued by him. I loved his tape, and I really liked the kid. And I got to spend a little more time in Fargo, both formally and informally with him. And I came away, and my dad, who was my high school football coach, asked me, he's like, why are you so all in on Carson Wentz? I've never seen you as committed to a player as you are to this Carson Wentz. And I said, Dad, when I walked away from him in Fargo, North Dakota, I felt like I walked away from Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson. There aren't that many people in the world that you walk away from and you feel like those guys. And I walked away from Carson Wentz. Here he is, age 22, and I'm thinking, wow, that's the real deal, both tangibles and intangibles. And the problem is there aren't 32 of them in the world. So then you start saying, what do I – you know, the age-old GM question, Ross, is kind of like, okay, well, everybody wants clean players. We wish we had 53 of them, but we don't. That's not the world we live in. You got to have enough talent to win. So it comes down to qualifying players that have off-the-field issues. And I'm kind of with you, and I think I learned my lesson as far as quarterbacks and character issues.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I might be wrong. Maybe Rosen and Mayfield end up being the best quarterbacks, but I gotta sleep. I gotta be able to sleep at night if I was doing that. You know, I'd love to have you on again, probably, Mike, to just break down more of the players in the draft, but just kind of an overview of the class's overall strengths and weaknesses for the 2018 draft class.
Sure, I think the quarterback class is intriguing, and I think it's deeper than usual. And everybody's talking about the top five or six guys, all of whom have potential first-round grades, which is an awful lot of first-round grades at quarterback. But there's also some depth to the class. You know, guys like Luke Falk, Kyle Lauletta, who played really well in the Senior Bowl, Mike White, another Senior Bowl guy who kind of stepped up and said, why not me? So if you figure there's only – an average of 12 quarterbacks that get drafted every year, there's five or six that have potential first-round grades. And then I just gave you three more. That's nine. So there's some pretty good quarterbacks at the top end and some depth throughout. I think the running back class for the second year in a row is outstanding. Saquon Barkley, arguably the best player in the draft. Geis from LSU, Ronald Jones, the two Georgia kids. I mean, there's some real talent and depth. I don't think the wideout class is great. Not a lot of star power at the top, but some good depth, I think, late first through third round. There's some interesting tight ends. I think the offensive line class is not as bad. Last year was historically, I don't want to say bad, but the numbers were way down as far as the offensive linemen that were picked in the draft last year. The guards are pretty good. The tackles aren't real deep again this year. And on the defensive side of the ball, man, I'm struggling to find some real edge rushers outside of Bradley Chubb, Marcus Davenport, and a couple other guys. Not a lot of edge rushers, but Ross, some great defensive tackles, some great off-the-ball linebackers, deep at corner, and pretty good at safety. So that's kind of a position-by-position overview.
I like it. And then just the two specific guys that I would ask you about, from a value standpoint, you mentioned Saquon Barkley. I think I've watched every snap he's played, certainly this past year, and I think the last 3 years. There's always the debate about the value of the running back position, and you see, you know, what guys like Kamara did in the third round, Kareem Hunt did in the third round. You also see what, you know, Zeke Elliott and Leonard Fournette did as top 10 picks. You know, put your GM hat on, Mike, and how would you value that position when, and even Dalvin Cook and Mixon, you know, in the second round, how would you value that position sort of in general if you had a top five, top 10 pick, knowing the production that people have gotten from guys later on at that position?
I think if a guy, a running back, is a true top 10 talent in a draft, true, you're not trying to talk yourself into it, you're committed and you believe that, you have an offense that's going to use them that way, plus or minus 20 touches a game. You mentioned Fournette. You mentioned Zeke. There's also Gurley. You know, there are three teams that drafted top 10 backs, basically, and have committed their offenses to them. And I'm a big believer if the guy has that kind of talent and you're philosophically willing to commit to that, then by all means, take him in the top 10. Now, if he's not a top 10 guy, I really believe there's plenty of depth in the second, third, fourth rounds of every draft. And you can see teams around the league dividing the carries and the catches. You know, Atlanta comes to mind, of course. There are a lot of teams dividing touches amongst their running backs, and you can get a lot of value later. So that's how I cut it, Ross. If there's just an immense talent that you're committed to, and I would qualify Saquon Barkley as just as good as the three guys we mentioned, plus he's completely clean off the field. So to me, he's a franchise tailback, and I think he's got to be going in the top five.
Mike, does it worry you at all that my one critique of him was that sometimes I felt like he was looking for the home run too much, and this might have been partially the Penn State's offensive line fault, but there were a lot of plays there where I wish he would have just hit it up in there and maybe he would pop out the other side. I think almost at times his talent almost is a curse because it seemed like there were times where he was looking for the 80-yard touchdown run, you know?
I'm 100% on board. If you watch the Ohio State tape, he took six or seven negative plays where he basically got the ball, didn't like the look, tried to spin out or bounce, and got nailed because Ohio State's defense can run. At the end of the day, I think it's eminently fixable. And I think what it really is a very talented guy who had huge numbers in the early part of the year. And then as teams geared up to stop him, the numbers weren't there anymore and he started to press a little bit. And you can see him trying to do things he shouldn't try to do. And I'm 100% with you. I'd much rather him get to the hole and just drop his pad level in game two instead of lose five. But I think it's eminently fixable. And I think it was more out of frustration than anything.
And then the last one, Mike, is Quentin Nelson. I did the U.S. Army Bowl when he was a senior in high school and was really impressed just by his size and athleticism back then as a senior in high school and his reasoning for picking Notre Dame and all that stuff. And, man, I mean, it's rare, Mike, that I watch a guy as much as I've watched him, like highlights of him. I love the guy. There's always this thought process about taking guards that high, but then I look and I see Kevin Zeitler getting $12 million as a guard. I see Kelechi Osemele getting close to $12 million. My guess is Andrew Norwell will get over $12 million. So I guess my point is, if we're going to pay guards, you know, $12 million a year, what, you know, is there really a problem with taking an unbelievably dominant prospect, you know, in the top five, top 10?
I believe that if a player is a potential all-pro player and you believe in that player, regardless of position, it's incumbent upon you to draft him. And Quentin Nelson fits into that profile. I think what hurts the guard position a little bit, Ross, is that if you look at, I think the last two guards taken in the top 10 were the same year. And I think if I remember, it was Cooper from North Carolina and Warmack from Alabama.
And yes.
I think they were both, what's that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right, yeah.
And they went in the top 10, and neither of them has even come close to having a legitimate, forget all pro, they aren't even starters. So there's what people perceive as a, quote, safe pick kind of fell off the cliff with those two kids. And I don't think you can paint Quentin Nelson with that brush. You know, he's got to be evaluated on his own merits. I think he's a top five. I think he's one of the best five players in the draft, if not the best player in the draft. You just touched on two of my favorite players that I've seen in several years, and that's Barkley and Nelson. I happen to know Nelson a little bit just because of having done Notre Dame games. And the left tackle next to him, Mike McGlinchey at Notre Dame, is a first-round pick, in my opinion. He's a Philadelphia kid, cousin of Matt Ryan. The two of them are two of my favorite players in this draft. They've been incredibly well-coached. Boy, Quentin Nelson's a joy to watch.
He really is. Mike, you're a joy to talk to. Always appreciate the time. I know you're crazy busy this time of year. Hopefully, you know, a little closer to the draft, we can talk to, with you again about some of the players, maybe some of the quarterbacks and stuff. Thanks so much, Mike.
You got it, pal. Thank you.
That was awesome, and that guy is awesome. Maybe we should have Fran get sick more often. Maybe we'll get Mike Mayock on. That was incredible. Love the conversations with Mike. He's excellent. Of course, check him out on Twitter, at Mike Mayock. Check us all out. Fran is at FDuffy3. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. The channel, of course, or the podcast is at RTF Podcast. We are heating up, baby. A little more than 2 months away from the 2018 NFL Draft. Fran should be healthy, ready to go back and at him next week. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out the Scouting Academy if you haven't already. That thing is incredible. Other than that, the keg is kicked. We are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft.
Chug, 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 chug.
Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.